Welcome back to the Skits and Giggles podcast. I'm Pascal, chief instigator of the show and your host. I'm joined by my co-host and our resident engineer, the yin to my yang, the silky big boy to my Klopspaten, Bryson. How's it going today, buddy?
Hey, Pascal. It's going good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm looking forward to today's conversation. We are joined by a secret trail fairy. So what our listeners have to know is that we've been using some very, very high-level technology and artificial intelligence and machine learning to alter the sound profile of our guest today. We are joined by a secret trail fairy, and we say hello to the secret trail fairy. Welcome to the Skits and Giggles podcast. How's it going?
Hey there. Going good. Good to be here with you.
Nice. See, that's how our technology works. It actually sounds like a mid-30s dude. And in reality, it's a 75-year-old lady that has been secretly digging in the forest.
Exactly.
Thank you for doing this in English. It really means a lot to us. But before we jump into our conversation today, let's just briefly do our spiel with the social and where you guys can find more information about the Skits and Giggles podcast. We're currently most active on our Instagram, where you can skid right into our DMs and follow along at Skits and Giggles. And you can find all of the info and whatever else you're looking for on our website under skitsandgiggles.com. Also, if you guys like what we're doing and want to know what's up, just give us a follow on Spotify. Hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to great podcasts. Finally, last one, sharing our episodes on your socials or a heartfelt 5-star rating on your favorite platform goes a long way in helping us reach more people like you. Right on. Let's get back to our secret trail fairy. Why don't we talk about how we actually came to invite you to this podcast? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so last year I was listening to a German podcast with also an old trail fairy, I think 74-year-old girl also, talking about the regional situation, especially about illegal trails, illegal built trails. He's one of the illegal trail builders. Actually, she is. And I think this podcast was a great opportunity to all the mountain bikers who ride mountain bike, ride trails, illegal trails, and don't have an idea what it takes to make illegal trails or non-official trails. Maybe we should say it like that. And just to give a perspective why trails are built like that, how much work it is to make them, and how difficult it is to build them and maintain them. So that's why I came up to you guys and thought, well, let's try to make the same in Switzerland.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a great idea, and I had to listen to the other lady on the German podcast, and it was really good to get the context of the local scene, and I think it would be good to do something similar here, and you know, that's why I think it's great that you came on, and thank you for, you know, volunteering your time.
Pleasure.
I mean, before we get into the digging, before we dig into the meat of the conversation, why don't we hear a little bit about your background in riding and, you know, what gets you stoked to go out there?
The thing that gets me most stoked is being with people on bikes or shovels. And for me, it doesn't matter if it's like going into a bike park, dirt jumps, pump trick, enduro riding, cross-country riding, even sometimes road bike. I pretty much enjoy being with other people, sharing my time, talking to them, having good times, pushing each other. I really have like hard times to do the sport by myself, but pretty good times to do it with other mates. It doesn't matter if it's mates I know for a long time or I meet new guys. So humans, people are the biggest thing that push me into mountain biking, and yeah, for a long time, and hopefully a long time coming too.
Okay, nice. And so mountain biking, you said it's like your main, let's say, your main disciplines, but I think you're also doing some dirt jumping, right?
Yeah, totally. Actually, I didn't do dirt jumping for like that much time as a lot of people think. it started in my mid-20s. It stopped again because it got too dangerous and I got too old. And at the beginning of my 30s, I started again due to a local dirt spot. And I'm loving it. It's like you dig a lot, you hang out. It's something else than lighting enduro. Like you pedal up and talk to each other, but you also having some issues with your breath while you're pedaling up. And on dirt jump, you're just staying on one point, talking a lot, pushing yourself. I love it. I love the people in my spot. And that's the thing I really enjoy.
Okay. But between enduro riding and dirt jumps, there is a kind of a common cultural underpinning of both kind of disciplines. And that's kind of this notion of no dig, no ride, and people building their own stuff. And I guess that's why we're sitting down tonight to talk about, kind of what gets you out there rather than just your bike, but also, bringing your shovel and the hacksaw and whatnot to actually build your own stuff. So maybe to start with, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into building and building your own trails?
Well, it started about, I would say, 2008. The place where I lived back then, we had some really younger boys building some trails, and those were the first mountain bike trails I rode. I mean, I ever like all the time I remember since I was a kid, I was riding my bike in the forest, but I never digged a trail. It was just like fire road and finding some like canyons and stuff, like to driving through, and nothing really special. And I think 2008, I saw the first dirt jumps were being built and the first like berms being built in the forest. And I hang out with that guys. And if you want to hang out with the guys, ride with them, you need to pick up a shovel at one point and start digging. So you evolve with the time. There are times where you dig less. There are times where you dig more. But getting older, digging starts to get even more and more interesting and important part in my life. So people think that you just dig to make a trail happen, but like digging is, you have ideas about your trail in the forest. You try to realize it. It's kind of a gym. It's kind of a sport, digging, and coming out of the forest, having just built like 5 meters, one berm, one jump, or even a piece of it, or maybe 100 meters of trail, you come out of the forest and you feel so good about it. And digging is a passion, and riding a trail afterwards is like, it's like just the cherry on top of the cream. And still love digging as back then when I started.
And has it always been part of your, let's say, riding experience, or was there a time when you were only riding or riding more? Or
I need to say, when I moved to this city where I'm living right now, I didn't dig, because like there were some local trails, I didn't knew the community, and I just didn't want to get into the forest and start digging somewhere and get into trouble. Especially because I knew that authorities are quite harsh in Switzerland. So if they catch you, the fines are super high. So I was like, I would say 2-3 years not of digging. Then I had the chance to start digging at the dirt spot, which was quite cool. But I feel more home in the forest digging. Like, I prefer to dig a berm than jumps, especially dirt jumps, because dirt jumps need a lot of effort and love and perfection. And if you build something in the forest, it, like a dirt jump, takes days of building. A jump in the forest, if it's not like a huge jump and use the terrain, it just takes some hours. And I feel more at home in the forest. So it's like 2-3 years without digging in the forest, and then I started to realize I need something to ride in my place nearby. So I started digging again, and until now it's going pretty good, I would say.
Okay, I guess maybe we can back it up a little bit here. because you know, already mentioned that you know, the authorities, of course, trail building is or unsanctioned trail building is of course kind of in a gray area of the rules and the law, and so you got to be a bit more careful. All I want to say is, like, at this stage, you know, we are aware that, you know, not everyone may or may not agree with what we are saying and discussing today, but, you know, we thought it was interesting to have this perspective. We've obviously had a couple of guests that are in official capacities working in trail building and working for official trail building companies. And and today is obviously a slightly different perspective. So with this disclaimer out of the way, I just wanted to talk a bit about kind of what drives you to dig your own stuff, right? Because of course there's been, you know, certainly where we are, there's been quite a bit of let's say in air quotes, official building. So there's been, you know, quite a bit of money and resources put into building official infrastructure, sanctioned trails. So here in Zurich, that's, you know, the Antrenna Trail that's been around for quite some time. There's the new Höckler Trail that's, you know, now been around for 6 months or whatever. So yeah, maybe to contrast that, kind of, why are you getting out into the forest to build your own stuff? Is that the official stuff not enough, or what is driving you?
Well, first of all, I need to say that my region here in Switzerland, there's not a single official trail. Nothing permitted, nothing officially being built. There's just some trails that have been there forever. And I need to say these are trails which are kind of fun for a while, but didn't like push my bike riding skills. And I didn't like the style that much, which doesn't mean the trail is not good. It's just like not suiting my kind of riding. And I thought, like, well, if I want to have something that suits my kind of riding, also the stuff I learned, like how to build a berm, maybe it's different than another guy build a berm or jumps. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to build something, to have something to ride. And on the other side, it's like a painter painting on a clean canvas. You have the possibility to pick an idea, to see the terrain and make something cool out of it. And these are the two reasons I wanted to start building a trail. In my recent years as a trail builder that's working a lot unofficially, we also try to work and talk to authorities and asking for a legal trail, and it's kind of always the same thing. They you come to them asking for a trail, saying, hey, there are so much riders, they need something to ride, and the authorities are always, oh yeah, we understand your problem, and we need to do something, and then it takes ages to happen, and then it's like costs are too high, insurance is a problem, then they need to find a piece of forest that is owned by the city or something. And seeing some bike project taking years, especially if I take Stuttgart in Germany, the Woodpecker Trail, the official downhill trail, it takes 10 years from the idea, or like asking for a legal trail to build a trail, it took 10 years. And I'm like, yeah, I need something right now, not for my next generation, for my kids or something. So that's the reason I went out and started digging something, even being aware that I'm in the garden of someone else. If it's it's part of forest that's from the government or something private, but you know, you're inside of the garden of someone and digging, and but that's the way to go. And I think a big piece of mountain bike culture is like someone just going inside of the woods, building something to ride and ride it. Mm. Yeah, that's the reason why I started digging here, I need to say.
But yeah, I guess, you know, in your defense, to some extent, we also maybe need to talk a little bit about what kind of stuff you're building. I mean, it's not like, of course, rampage has just happened last weekend. Fantastic again. But this is not what you're building.
Very exciting.
This is not what you're building, right? So
not exactly, no.
So why can't you? Why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, what kind of stuff you're building and you know?
Yeah, it really depends on the terrain. So the character of the trail is super depending on that. What kind of soil or dirt do you have? Is there a lot of roots? What kind of trees are? So with the time you learn which kind of trees needs which kind of soil. So you exactly know that tree means, okay, it's a lot of clay here. And you see that tree and you know, okay, there's some softer dirt. Then you look for stones and rocks and stuff. You look for inclination. And this makes the character of the trail. And there are like two ways I try to take. The first one is like building something for me, which mostly means like it's a bit more technical, maybe faster, maybe some gap jumps and stuff. And on the other hand, when I know a trail is in a region where a lot of people frequently ride, I try to make it as safe as possible. Fun as possible, but on the other side, no gaps, safe berms, and nothing blind where you just like can get into trouble very easy. So I'm not like making super easy trails, but good enough that you can roll down without dying.
Well, that's actually a very good point you make. I mean, you know, because, you know, as you may or may not know, we've had a conversation with Greg Jolliffe about you know, the new Hökla Trail, and one of his key points that he was making was exactly this sustainability, and you know, it needs to be a trail, like a high frequency trail or a trail that's being ridden by many people. You know, it needs to be on the one hand, it needs to be safe, but on the other hand, it also needs to hold up really well. For the traffic and people riding it when they shouldn't be riding it. And so this notion of sustainability, is this also something that features in your trails apart from the safety aspect, or how are you thinking about this?
I try to make the train as sustainable as possible, but I'm not going to bring any external material to the forest. So it would be good to have some like plastic tubes to make a drainage out of berms or in front of jumps. But this is something I can't do. So sometimes it happened that a berm of mine is like full of water. And I heard people complaining about it, like, your berm is full of water. Why don't you make a proper drainage or something? But without making a drainage or a tube inside of the ground, you need to open up the berm at the end, especially at the point where you need the most pressure for a berm. So mostly I decide to, okay, well, I prefer to make a good berm that's full of water, but it holds you, that rather than building a berm that's too flat and you just like, you cannot pin it because it's too flat. And at the point where you just want to drop inside of the corner, it's gone. So yeah, this is something you need to live with, especially when you don't want to bring external material. But we try also to make the trail as narrow as possible, staying away from trees, staying away from roots. So we don't destroy roots so the tree doesn't die as good as possible. I would lie if I would say there's not sometimes a root that needs to lose some teeth. But I'm a guy who loves the forest. I'm a guy who loves every tree. And the last thing I want to do is like fall a tree or kill a tree by building a trail or riding. So I want to make it as sustainable and as environmental friendly as possible.
Miss Ferry, I've ridden definitely my fair share of non-sanctioned trails. Some of them before I even understood what sanction and non-sanction were. And also kind of in my local spot back home, I would find random trails just appearing in the woods. They're quite raw, and basically they relied on the ridership to kind of mow them over, and really like they were just cut in very raw. And then after several riders would go through, it starts to become a little more clear where exactly the line is, where the turn is, and things like that. But it was a terrain that wasn't so hilly. It was more flat and rolly. So it kind of catered to this. Like, you didn't really need to put a lot of effort. How are your trails looking more like this, or are you kind of having a spotless trail, as if a professional had come through and fixed everything afterwards and made it pristine, like no one was there, a real fairy would?
Well, I think as for me, as for professional, building a trail from the scratch that works from beginning to the end, I think it has never been accomplished, and it would be a piece of big luck to accomplish. I think you need to have a good amount of experience to know how long a gap jump should be, how big the radius of a corner should be, how far away the corner should be from another, how big a flat should be so it doesn't get too hectic. And a thing I learned about with the years of building, you have an idea, you build it as good as possible, you ride it, and then you need to decide, so is it good or is it not good? And then you need to adjust to it. And I think this is a thing most authorities get wrong. It's like, okay, we're going to ask a big company like Velo Solutions to build a trail. So you got a week or 2 weeks to build the trail, and it needs to be done after that. And it's quite a high pressure for trail builders to build something and expect everything works after 2 weeks, especially like if in the 2 weeks it's raining and the soil is wet. So it's super hard to determine how fast you're going to be through the corners and berms. And I think a trail gets good while aging, while people continue making it better. I think mostly I learned that on the dirt jumps, because people on dirt jumps are kind of a different breed, especially like Greg Jolliffe or something. Changing like some degrees of a jump could change everything about the flow of the line. And it doesn't matter if it's a line, it doesn't matter if it's a George Road in New Zealand or some other good dirt spots, they get good after aging, after people changing something, changing to the direction, which maybe means, okay, it's worse than before, so go back to the other side. And this lets your experience grow. This lets the trail get better. And I try to accomplish the same thing. So I build a trail, I ride it. And if I'm not happy with this, with something, I change it. If it would be something official, it would be way easier, because you just go inside of the forest, change it. You don't need to be scared of someone catching you, like police or woodworkers or something. You just do it. And doing that a bit undercover means like, okay, what time of the day should I go into the forest, not to meet too much people? And this is harder to accomplish on a non-official trail than on an official trail. But I try to, like, every time I ride the trail and I find something like that berm is like, I don't like it, so I change it until the trail gets something good. And if I see, like, everybody knows the A-line. If you've ridden or not, you see it in a movie or in a film or something, in a video, and you know, oh, that's A-line. And if you see the, like, A-line 10 years ago and see it now, it's something totally different. And I'm sure the A-line is now better than it has ever been. And a reason for that is, like, it evolves. It gets better and better and better. People try something out. Sometimes it gets worse at one point, but then the people notice that and make it a correction to the right side.
And when you're sussing out a trail or a prospective trail, do you tell yourself, okay, I want to build here and I want to do it before the end of the season? Or do you want to say, okay, I'm just going to cut it in quick and then go back to what I was doing before? Maybe you were already maintaining a different trail.
First of all, when we start scouting something, or I start scouting, especially when it's something that's non-official, a big point is like trying to make a trail on an area where not a lot of people are, where it's not crossing a lot of fire roads, where it's not like hunting seeds close nearby, which is quite hard if you live in a region where a lot of people live, especially like Wittliberg or something. It's like every 5 meters, there's a fire road. So trying to build something unofficial that's not going to be found immediately is quite hard. So this is a big point about scouting, where to build a trail. And I never had a deadline to build a trail. I start to build a trail. If it starts raining and it's raining too much, I leave the place. If, like, depending on what kind of season, there are too much, like, mosquitoes trying to kill me, I leave the place. So the trail's ready when the trail's ready. That's actually it. So I try not to hurry. Sometimes you, like, meet with some friends and you just, like, carve in some lines into fresh soil without any tools, just with the bikes. But if I build something, I try to build it as good as possible, yeah.
Does that include maintenance, of course? And how many trails are you currently maintaining or actively building?
maintaining is like the same thing as explained with like making the trail better. You need to go into the forest and try not to be caught. Even like if you're not the guy who built the trail, if you're maintaining, the police catches you, you are the guy who built it. I try to maintain as much as possible, cut back like branches and stuff, take away trees to see where like potholes are and stuff. I had about, in my region, 7 trails. Two of those trails still exist. The rest was killed by the authorities in the last year. So there was quite a big, big thing going on by the local authorities, destroying a lot of trails, closing them, putting signs on the start of the trail saying, if you ride here, you will get a pretty big fine. And at the beginning of the season, it just literally put me nearly into a depression, because like if trail building and riding trails is the thing that you love to do and it's not possible anymore nearby, then like it cuts a hole inside of your daily business, into your life. And still now I'm at a point where I think I found every spot where I could build something without getting into too much trouble. So right now my hands are, I can't go into the forest right now and build something. I can't go into the forest and maintain a trail, which I would love to, because there's nothing more I hate riding through a trail and knowing it's not in a good shape and getting angry because nobody is like going to the forest and making, repairing the trail, maintaining the trail. And I'm in a position right now where I can't do that. Like it's, yeah, sitting at home and, not knowing what to do. So if anyone listened to this and they got a hill and a forest and they like trails,
get in touch with us.
Yeah, get in touch with me, because I'm like keen to build something.
But I mean, that's actually a very good point you make. This is kind of the question of even if you have, let's not call it sanctioned trails, let's call it accepted trails. So because here in,
yeah,
so where we live, so. Or where I live, Bryson doesn't live in here anymore. where I live, there's kind of this kind of in between of if it's been around for long enough, basically, it's kind of accepted and it's fair game. And then the question I had is like, where does maintenance end, right? So going out. So for example, while I was working from home during the last episode of our pandemic, a nice lunchtime break was, walking out the back door into the forest for 5-10 minutes and then clear up some of the trails, like cut back some trees, build a drainage, fix a berm, whatever it is. And that was my lunch break, and then come back and continue work. So that I would consider maintenance. I'm not building a new trail. And, but then, some people, as you mentioned, if you go out to the forest and cut back some branches, that's already considered building an unsanctioned trail, and you could potentially get in trouble. So it's actually an interesting question, or kind of where Where does maintenance end and where does trail building start?
I think this is very, very political and hard to, like, I can draw a line, but it doesn't mean that it's the line that the authorities would draw. I think building a trail is like standing in front of white canvas and starting a new line and making the trail better, maintaining it, cutting branches, but this is all maintenance. But the line is very thin, and I think it just grows in together. And as I said, I think a trail needs to grow, get better as it gets older. As long as you maintain it. If you don't maintain it, it's very likely to get worse, depending on where you go. But for me, there's not a real line. I prefer to build a new trail than to maintain a trail. Like cutting branches back is not the most fun thing to do, but it's part of the game. And it's like this year I had this super big scar on my face because like of a branch that hit me. I had it for like 3 months, and I'm like, hey, why? It wasn't a trail I built, and I'm like, why are the people accepting it? Like everybody's riding it, nobody's like saying like let's do something. And at least for my trails, I want to keep like branches away as good as possible.
Sounds like you're a really nurturing fairy. You're letting the trails grow organically. You're almost raising them, I guess you could say.
Yeah, never thought about that, but that's quite raising a trail. I love that.
That's quite wholesome.
Parenting.
Yeah, and it must have been. I can really feel the emotion coming through the microphone. When you tell me about losing those five, because you can't really step into there again. And if someone sees you step in there, they're going to question why you're doing that. I mean, not you, but if anybody steps in there, and then it's going to be, okay, they know about these trails and they don't want them there. And so they're going to keep a vigilant eye. So it must be really, really hard to accept the fact that now you can't touch those five again, or at least for the short period, next short period.
One of my best mates, he was like kind of a neighbor of mine, and unfortunately he moved away a bit further, like 3.5 hours, and we were like pretty good team. We talked a bit about the line, everybody did his thing, and it connected together. And I remember a trail we were building, and we had like some sessions on it, even though it wasn't ready. And we came back to the trail at one day, and there was like two cameras hanging in the forest. Ooh. Pointing at a berm, and they destroyed the berm a bit. So like, let's see who's going to repair the berm. And we knew like, okay, we need to get out of here. And every now and then I just came back to the forest to see if the camera was still hanging. And meanwhile, the whole trail was it's not like destroying a bit. They destroyed the whole trail, and they cut off every single tree, like I would say a diameter of like 10 to 15 centimeters into the trail. I would say 30, 40, maybe 50 trees. And I'm like, okay, I understand that it's like you don't want to have mountain bikes in the forest because you think it's something bad for the forest. But man, you did cut so many young trees down. And it feels like, okay, what I do is not okay. But the way you're trying to react to that, it's also not okay.
Worse.
And yeah, and you still hear a lot of the discussion of like the forest is not a place where bikes should be. Forest is just for hikers. I'm like, well, if you want to be natural, then hike, but without your super high-tech hiking shoes, because your hiking shoe is also just a tool that you need to walk through the forest. Walk barefoot if you want to be like God made you. And I never had some issues with hikers because like I slow down when I see hikers. I always am friendly and never had a hiker screaming at me because like if you're good to someone, the other people will be good to you. But like seeing sometimes discussion in the internet, it makes me sad, like people thinking the forest just for the thing I do. And sometimes the whole discussion just pushes me down so bad that like I'm really sad about it. Sad about closed trails, sad about people thinking mountain bikers are bad and evil, bad for the forest. A thing I hear a lot is about, yeah, but you mountain bikers and trail builders, because of you, all the deers run away and stuff. And like, if you would come with me into the forest and look how much deers come next to me, look what I do, and you would be amazed. Deers come next to me. So my wife is always like, oh, I saw a deer today. I'm like, yeah, well, I see deers all the time in the forest. They're next to me because they see you, they get used to you, and they start stop being frightened about you. And I think the point, like how people look at mountain bikes and trails is still a very old-fashioned way. That's not correct, I would say.
But maybe to bring back some positivity, what kind of stuff do you love to build?
I would say berms, that kind of berms that rips your tire off your rim, something like that. And then one after the other, and then some jumps in between and some berms again. It really depends a bit of like, there where I live, there are like not a lot of roots. There are not a lot of rocks which you could use to build a trail. So if you got good soil and clay, you build berms and some jumps and try to make it as flowy as possible and to use your brake as less as possible. So that's the kind of stuff I love to do. And if you build like a single berm, that's one thing, but like connecting some berms together and having the flow from one side to the other, to the one side to the other, after doing that and you know it works, that puts a huge grinding in your face. And I mean, building a trail is a lot of work, and running through it and seeing that it works, it's present. It's a huge present you get. And I think that's keep me pushing, even though there are some like sad times. It keeps me pushing forward to build another berm and have fun with some mates.
So you also mentioned that you're talented at sculpting some dirt jumps, but you also said on the opposite side that you prefer to be in the forest. So what are the virtues that bring you or attract you to the forest, building in the forest, rather than building in like a sanctioned jump park or, you know, like a city spot that people know that you're always sculpting or something?
Dirt jumps, like proper dirt jumps that look nice and ride nice, are super hard work. And it's if you see how good some guys, especially at our spot, are in shaping those things, it's insane. Just like changing a jump by 1 or 2 degrees, changing the radius, it changed the whole character of a jump. And it's some fun. It's quite a lot of fun, and I'm not super good at shaping to the end, but it's way much work than building something in the forest. In the forest, you don't need to be as precise as on dirt jumps. I mean, you're building stuff for 20-inch bikes without any suspension. In the forest, you're building some stuff for bikes with suspension, thick tires, and this is way more forgiving and way faster. So I can do like a set of 4 proper berms in an afternoon. On a dirt spot, I can shape 1 berm in 4 days. So the reward of building something in the forest is way higher because it's much easier and much quicker. And building trails and those guys, especially who are good at that, which I wouldn't count myself to, I'm more the guy who helps to bring a lot of dirt from one point A to B than to like do the last bit of perfect shaping. This is the highest class of digging that you can think of. And it's fun, but it's a lot of work, and sometimes frustrating, because if the dirt is not in the right moisture, it just falls off again, and you try to repair it and it falls off again and it doesn't look good, and it's it needs way more experience than building something in the forest, at least for my side. And I also started with like building in the forest. It's cool to be in between the woods, to scope the landscape, to determine the speed you need, the speed you will get from any kind of topography. And I think it's way more fun. And it's also more fun standing in the forest while it's raining than standing on the open ground digging some dirt jumps while it's raining.
Yeah, part of the the experience for me when I was joining Dig Days, or even just cleaning up some fallen branches and stuff in the local spot near my house, was always like, you know, I go on this trail, and when I get to the end, it's like a journey. And that speaks to me. I don't know in what meadow way or whatever, but that's how I look at it, is I kind of went on this little journey, a little expedition, and I don't know, it's a little story for me, you know?
I think also, like, if you go building with a friend, it also gets competitive. Like, who's going to build the best berm? Who's going to build the best section? And so on one side, you may think like, oh, well, it's very competitive. Shouldn't you take it more easy? But on the other side, it pushes you to make the best of the section of the trail as you can do, making the best berm, making the best jump. And afterwards, you're riding the stuff and riding to the berm that you built. It's like, well, that's my berm. That's my berm. And it's running great. Sometimes you ride into your berm, it's like, ah, well, it's okay. And then you go into the berm of your mate and it's like, well, that berm is great. And then you try to make yours better. And that pushes you so much. It's like, you know how it's when mountain bikers run around and you see a rock roller and somebody says, I dare you, won't do that. And like, hold my beer. And this is what pushes your skills, like making it a bit competitive. And I think this is one thing I heard also about Whistler. Like, they're digging crews trying to make their trail the best trail ever. So they're pushing their own trails to the best they can be. And yeah, this works with trails. This works with bike skills.
Oh, yeah. You should see those diggers ride.
Yeah. I saw Greg ride, and it's like, that's all right.
Yeah, he's a prime example.
Like, he builds big stuff and he's not scared to send it like the first gun. He's just like Ronnie 69 something. Just going to send it.
Wow. But one question I had on that, I mean, you mentioned you're building with friends and you know, pushing each other on, but are trail builders, of course, outside of the official organizations, are they organized, or is that all kind of secret handshake kind of situation?
Well, I just can't speak for my region. So we are a handful of builders here, and we know each other, and we try to make up. Sometimes there's a new trail growing somewhere in the woods, and you don't have a clue who is building. So sometimes you never get to know the people who are building. Or maybe you meet them, but you don't know that they are the trail builders. But there's a local club that's trying to gather as much people as possible to make an official trail happen. I'm not part of the club, but I'm in like tight contact with them, trying to help them with like, what would be a good spot to build a trail? What kind of trail could you build here? I also would be immediately in if I could take my shovel and dig into the ground. But due to all the stories I had with authorities trying to make something official happen, all the politics behind that, at one point I decided I don't want to be part of the political process. It takes so much of my energy. It takes so much of my motivation. So I'm more of the guy, if you want to build something, call me, I'm there. But if you want to do something political, I'm out. That's very high respect to all the guys who, especially like the story I told about Stuttgart, 10 years to make a legal trail. Very high respect to those guys, because this is mental. But I try to stay away from the political process.
And you know, when you get around, I assume you not only ride your own trails. I think you hopefully also get around. I know you do get around, because I ran into you on the parking lot, and I was like, "Who is that old lady? She needs her wheelchair soon." But you know, it was coming quite quick. But anyway, I was wondering. I mean, of course, yes, you're building your own stuff. You have this competition with your buddies about who builds the better trails and the better berm and the nicer jump. And what is the last time you went to kind of a spot where there was, you know, sanctioned or unsanctioned trails where you had to say like, wow, these are really cool trails?
This year, I felt a bit back in love with Flims. I've been to Flims several times before. I rode the Ronka Trail. It was cool stuff. But Velo Solutions built the Nagens Trail, which is, I think, the worldwide first trail built just by electrical power. And I need to say, especially like the rough stuff inside of the forest over the rocks and the roots, damn, I'm in love with that track. It's like quite a long track. So if you do full laps on it, it's very hard on your hands, which is quite cool. Good training. And that's I think the trail that blew me away mostly the last time, because a lot of trails are made recently for majority of people starting riding. So flow trails, not a lot of technical stuff in it. And on the other hand, people building a lot of big jump lines, like so Schlattming doing a lot of stuff recently, Leogang doing also on the Heckler on the bottom, the big jump line. So it feels kind of like, oh, you're going to build a huge jump line, or we're going to build a flow line. And everything in between is getting very rare these days. So natural trails, rocks and roots, mid-sized jumps. This is getting super rare these days, which is super sad. And not judging these trails by quality or stuff. And I love also jumping. That's not the thing. But I think building technical stuff, roots and rocks and stuff that really uses your suspension and pushes your O-ring up until the crown, this is stuff that's really missing these days. And I hope more stuff like Nagens or even a bit rougher, maybe some technical old school download stuff is coming back in the future. I think that's also a reason a lot of people still love like bike parkour comparing to Lenzerheide, because it's still got some rougher stuff, even though you can feel like Coors also making a lot of new stools, putting a lot of new school stuff also into it. So it's a good mixture of, I would say. But yeah, Nagens is, I would say, the thing that pushed me most this year to go into the mountains, right? I didn't use my downhill bike once this year. I just used my trail bike to get a bit more feel of the rocks and roots.
Nice. But again, you know, just also picking up on a conversation we had previously, and it's of course you're a lady in a very advanced age, and former guest of the podcast, Karin, she's making a good point about the Höckler Trail, and it just she said it just feels like you know, it's been built, you know, with like this very, you know, the big senders, the bros, like these, you know, big challenging jump lines and big features and all that sort of stuff in mind. But there is no, as you just said, like there's no in between. And just wondering, do you know any other female trail fairies that are kicking about and building nicer features?
Not really nearby. I think nearby actually right now it's not a lot of stuff happening. Maybe there's someone building. Actually, I'm lying. I know a guy who is building some stuff, which is, I think, not too far away from here. I think it's even half official. He's a BMX guy. He's quite good. And I saw him digging a lot and seen some recent pictures with the excavator. I think there's some nasty stuff coming. I'm looking forward to that. But I don't know how official it is, so I won't talk too much about who it is and where it is.
But yeah, no, she was making a good point. It's like you know, she wants to, because of course diversity is a very, very big topic wherever you go these days, be it at work or in the media or politics, etc. And she was saying that, like, you know, it would be good to also have a little bit more diversity in trail building, right? So not only having the bros building the big stuff, but also have maybe some girls or not necessarily girls, but you know, just some intermediate stuff. And I guess that's what also your point is like, you know, there needs to be a little bit more of everything, and so for all the skill levels and stuff.
Yeah, I think Höckler and Harakiri are a great example how people misunderstood what a trail can be. Harakiri is something that wasn't built legal, and there was a plan to build something alternative with for higher level skilled riders, which is totally okay. And I would say Höckler is a trail for higher skilled riders, which is kind of what they try to accomplish. But the one thing is more kind of a jumpier, flowier kind of trail, and the other thing is a technical trail. So just putting a trail in a category of difficult or easy or very difficult doesn't tell you what kind of trail it is. So I know a lot of people who are super good at steep, technical, gnarly stuff. They ride super steep stuff without looking at it first run, and like, are you crazy? And those guys can't jump like a 5-meter jump. And there are guys who are pretty good at jumping, and they're like not super good at riding technical stuff. And so I think Höckler was a bit of a misunderstanding. A lot of people asked for a technical trail, and they got more flowier, jumpier kind of trail, which doesn't mean the trail is not good or they built something wrong. It's just something different than the Harakiri was. And I think it would be good to have thinking about more about the process, what you could build. On the other hand, you need to say on the Höckler, this is what the topography and the soil gave you. So less roots, you will have less roots to ride. It's not like you can say we're going to plant something here. So it's very easy to judge over the people who built the trail and say, well, we asked for technical trail and you built something like that. And it's like, yeah, this is like, I think Greg told it in the podcast, they had like a way where to go on the GPS line and about like 8 meters on both sides to go. And that's where they had to sculpture a trail in it. And if the terrain is not steep, and if the terrain has no rocks and stuff and no roots, so you need to build something that fits to the terrain. So, it's very easy to judge, especially for people who don't build, because they don't understand how the trail character evolves. I think it's a super great trail they built on this place. Exactly what the best thing they could get out of this hill, but it's not what I think a lot of people expected.
Very good point. Fully agree.
Yeah, if Karen wants to come out to Bern, we can do a lap on the Gürtel. It's like this medium ability thingy. I mean,
yeah,
I love it.
I've been there for a long time.
It's super fun.
I had a lot of good times, especially on the trail bike, because the trail bike gives you like, especially on the rougher stuff, still gives you a feel of there's something happening under you. Some good mid-sized jumps. I think I haven't been there for at least 3 years or something. I think I need to go again, especially in winter, because it's good destination, because it's still running, even though it's a bit muddier and colder and snowier.
Well, come on a crisp day, sprinkle your fairy dust. We'll do a couple laps.
All right. I'm in.
Have a vegan hot dog. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be grand.
Could we also have a vegan beer afterwards?
Yep.
Okay. I'm in.
All right. Bryson, you got anything more?
We've sprinkled fairy dust on every topic.
There's all the fairy dust.
I mean, it's just scraping on the surface and trying to make people understand what it takes to build a trail. Because I get very often into conversation about, yeah, I'm not a fan of non-official trails. And like, so what kind of trails do you ride? Ah, you do ride my trails. You know that's non-official. Ah, I didn't know that. So people think like, just because there's a trail, it means it's official. And it is not. And the people who build this stuff are putting themselves into danger not like life-threatening, but like paying a fine that's several thousands of francs can put you in kind of danger. It's also kind of stressing going to the forest, starting digging a new trail and hoping there's no one around you who's going to catch you up. So I hope that people who ride bikes and don't build trails and are kind of like not in a good mood about non-official trails get a bit of understanding what like normal people who work day in, day out in a normal jobs, having families or whatever, going to the forest and putting a lot of work into a trail so that everybody could have fun. It would be cool that people at least get a bit of an understanding of that and don't take everything for granted, because I think that's a problem of Western society, especially when they are a bit wealthier than like Central Europe, Switzerland, Austria, Germany, taking everything for granted. Oh, there's a trail. Somebody built it. Probably somebody paid for it. No, it's not like that. Somebody sweated a lot for it, and it would be cool if you at least understand that it takes a bit to make a good trail.
I think listening after listening to our conversation, the listeners are going to have a good idea of the risks involved and also the hard work and the thought and emotion that goes into growing and developing and raising these trails. As you are able to, other trail builders who are doing so without a legal ground. Maybe can you touch on what are some of the ways that these people remain incognito and how these trails just mysteriously appear? Sorry, these other fairies remain incognito and just these trails just seem to appear. How is it that they remain anonymous?
Getting to know what are the best times to build a trail. A lot of people think like they, after winter, they pick up the bike in the first days of spring when it's nice. And after the bike shop had to repair the bikes after winter, they go into the forest. Oh, there's a new trail. Probably someone started yesterday building it. It's now alone. There's an idiot digging the whole winter to make something happen. So digging season is mostly when riding season ends a bit. So it starts raining. It starts to get ugly and cold. And like, in winter, I need to bring my hot tea so I don't die freezing because I'm out there at -2 degrees trying to dig while the ground is not frozen. And I think that's the way a lot of people try to get out of getting caught, just using times where nobody is inside of the forest because it's damn ugly, cold, wet, and windy and whatever. But there are also now some people who built trails which are non-official but like permitted. They go into the forest, talk to the hunter, and the hunter explains, well, it's cool if you build something here, you should not build something here because of the deers or something. And on the other hand, the mountain bike trail builders help the authorities to build hiking trails. So the hiking trails in that region are all built by mountain bikers.
Flowy hiking trails.
I don't want to take jobs away from Velo Solutions or Trailworks or something, people who are building officially trails for money. But imagine having a region where like mountain bikers build trails and hiking trails, working hand in hand. And the only cost that you would have is like for some digging tools, for some shovels and saws and whatever you need to build a trail. You could make something pretty good hand in hand with authorities. But this is I just know one region where it's like that, and no other place that would do something like that. But that would be my dream, to build mountain bike trails, build hiking trails, because like, I mean, even though you won't ride it with your bike, it's like same thing. Like how should I use the topography, the soil, the ground to make something work out? Maybe less flow on a mountain bike trail, but this would be my dream. I would immediately start digging hiking trails if I could build mountain bike trails on the other hand.
Seems like a decent trade-off.
That's a super decent trade-off. I hope some authorities are listening to this and saying, like, that's an idea. Let's do that.
All right. Well, thanks for the time, Trail Ferry. I know it's getting towards your time of the day when, you know, you need to have your nighttime tea and roll towards the bedroom. But we have a couple of closeout questions that we like to go through with our guests, if that's okay. So I know it's been a long, long, long time, but can you tell us a little bit about the bike that got you stoked on riding first?
Due to my missing experience, like the first mountain bikes I had weren't that great, but the very, very first bike that got me into mountain biking and it was a bike that made me feel like I could do anything was the 2008 Specialized Essex Trail. Especially because I saw it like in the video segments with Bierklaw and mostly Steve Romaniak. I don't know, probably you still know him.
Drop in crew.
He had like this video series called Season. No, not Season. It was, I think, Stunt. Stunt, yeah. And there was this one video segment where Steve Romo was riding and there was this Hilltop Hoots song, Recapturing the Vibes. Man, that song still pushes me so hard. I see the video segment in front of my eyes, Romo riding this Essex Trail with a Fox 36. I tried to build my bike as good as possible, similar to his bike, and this got me so stoked. And this was my first proper bike inside of a bike park. My first proper crashes. This is where it all started.
Oh, the Essex Trail is a prime bike. It also got me stoked. I never had one, but
I even bought an SX. I had the Essex Trail and an Essex. So riding like jump trails Jibbing. And stuff with the Essex. Damn, that was good times.
Nice. Very nice. Well, next one is the famous Harry Scedini and we wonder if you were a bike magician extraordinaire like Harry Scedini and you can make riding a bike more awesome for anyone by the stroke of a magic dropper post, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I feel more like Harriet Scedini.
Oh yeah, right, sorry.
I think mountain bikes reach the pinnacle of what they can be, pretty much. I mean, that doesn't mean that they're not evolving, but mountain bikes are on the point where I would say enduro bike can do everything. It can climb, it can go downhill. It's sure, there's some stuff getting better, lighter, stiffer and stuff. But a thing I would change is like to freeze some standards, like hub sizes, diameters of some like fork steerer tubes. Man, this is something gets me crazy about mountain biking these days. New standards saying stiffer is better, making everything different than the year before. And you're trying to, you know, if you have money and buy a new bike, you don't care. But if you're broke and trying to buy an old bike and trying to find a fork for an old bike, so, oh, is it a tapered steerer tube? Yes, no. So is it boost? Is it not boost? Yes, no. And, you know, so many standards and all the bike manufacturing saying, yeah, we need this new standard to make everything better. I don't think that it's needed in that way that it's coming right now. So I would freeze some standards for at least 10 years. So no metric, non-metric strokes and try to make bike industry better without like having new standards all the time, making everything more expensive. I think this is something I would try to do. Bikes are cool right now.
I fully agree. Just need to get them shipped.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Imagine a world without standards. You don't sound like a mountain biker.
No, I like standards. Standards are something good, but if you change standards all the time, it's
that's no standard.
Yeah, it's like, I remember you had shock sizes. You had 165, 190, 200, 216, 222, 241, 267. And now it's metric, and every metric has a different, it's trunnion mount, it's normal mount, and then it's like, one is 200 millimeters long with 60 millimeter of shock, the other one has 55, the other one has 65. So you have no chance to find anything that fits to your bike because every standard is different. So they should freeze some stuff and say, well, here we have 5 or 6 different shock sizes and that's the way to go. And I think it worked. It did work before we have metric sizes, and metric didn't make the bikes better. At least you felt something different, but I didn't.
At least the measurements made sense.
Yeah, the measurement made sense, but if you get used to strange numbers, you're used to, yeah. Imperial sizes. Yeah, that's something I would do.
Right on. So imagine I find myself on one of your trails and you just want to show me a little bit how you sprinkle your pixie dust. I'm standing on a berm and I'm going to watch you do a righteous skid. What was that going to look like?
First of all, I have to say, disclaimer, standing on top of the berm is a dangerous place because I would try to move as fast as I can into the corner, brake as hard and late as possible, and let the brake just go in the moment before I crash and slide out. I built berms and I don't like if stuff gets destroyed, but if someone is a proper rider and know how to shroud into corners, man, it's a pleasure to watch this and repair the berm for him. So that's what I would do. Try to shroud as crazy as possible and spray you with some glorious tire milk sealant.
Nice. I can see it and feel it.
I'm a heavy lady, so it's not that hard to shroud.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you, very heavy trail fairy lady. This was really, really cool. And, thank you very much for sitting down with us tonight.
It was a huge pleasure.
And, I guess we can't really share your contact details. So we say if you guys want to have the contact details of the Magic Trail Fairy, just hit us up in our Instagrams, on our contact form, on our homepage or whatever. Just let us know what you want to know and how you want to get in touch, and we'll arrange for that. Thanks again, and hopefully I'll see you out on the trails again soon.
Hopefully we could have an old lady ride Gurten or somewhere else.
Exactly. Cheers, guys.
Ciao.
Peace.